afternoon. Today is Tuesday, July the 23rd, 203rd day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon is the CEO.
There we go.
Of the Humboldt Bay Conservation, Recreation.
Harbor.
And Harbor.
Recreation and Conservation District.
You know, there's just too many words. Harbor Recreation Conservation District. There we go.
There we go.
Perfect. Eventually. And Shelter Grove.
Of course, yeah.
Jack Kreider. Hey, guy.
Hello there.
So, summer treating you well?
It's good. It's good.
Does that mean you're happy to be off the island? Or does that mean it's good?
No, it's good. I actually am. I live on the island and work on the island, so I'm on the island always.
You're living must be in a boat.
Oh, no. No, I'm at the peninsula, so I live in Manila, so it's an island too, you know.
Yeah, well, it depends on who you talk to. Yeah, no kidding. This afternoon, we're talking a little bit about the future. What does Humboldt Bay look like in the future? And also, we'll spend a little bit of time talking about shipping on the West Coast, if that has been returning as time goes on and we keep hearing more and more pressures in some of the existing harbors. So we've got a couple different things to talk about, but they're pretty big ones. Stay tuned and you'll find out.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggy of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank. Our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:13. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Jack Kreider, but before we do, our quote this afternoon comes from an unknown source, but it's good just the same. Time is nature's way of keeping everything from happening at once. Kind of works for me. So, what is the big challenge out in the bay right now, Jack?
Oh, I mean, we've got a variety of challenges out there. I mean, you know, the basic infrastructure is lacking, and you know, the bay itself is a fantastic bay with huge lots of potential, lots of natural resources to draw on. We just we need a facility. That's been what I've been working on the last year since I've been here.
The marine terminal.
The marine terminal, exactly. Just that basic terminal facility, and so that's been one of the primary goals. Obviously, been trying to right the ship here financially with the marina and you know the efforts in getting the harbor up and going again and I feel
was that a victim of the recession?
No, I think it's just a culture of support, financial support of the industry to our detriment, and so we've actually suffered, you know, huge financial losses and accepted those losses, and so just changing that culture, that mindset that we've got to at least recover our cost on our operations. And we've taken a lot of steps to do that, and I think everybody's feeling pretty good there that we're at least in a positive direction. Just same way with the harbor. You know, we took big steps back in early 2000 to, you know, dredge, the big dredging project that we did, and then we further that by, you know, making sure that we had bar pilots here. That has cost us over $3 million. And so there's been a lot of
out of the Harbor District's funds or total project dollars?
Out of the Harbor District's funds. So we had to match the deepening project. We had to go out and borrow the money. There's supposed to be a surcharge that was going to cover a bulk of that. Well, it hasn't. It's the same way with the bar pilots.
So. Because with the surcharge, there just wasn't that kind of biz?
There was not that enough tonnage. Was that enough business? So, you know, it's dropped off substantially. And we saw a little glimmer of hope in 2011, like it was increasing, and then of course it dropped down again. So
when you look at the potential, or I guess the infrastructure, my understanding was that you needed to have the channel to possibly be a player.
Sure, absolutely.
So that's still the case.
It was
just because nobody followed, the marketplace didn't follow the deepening of the port and then the maintenance of that channel?
Well, you got to be competitive in this market. I mean, we're competing with all the ports up and down the West Coast, and it's all about the costs. And it's very, very slim margins when you're exporting products. And if your costs are too high, you're not going to be able to compete in the market. And so our loading costs are too high, our log costs are too high. So it really makes it difficult here for us to compete. And so I think that's why we were focusing on good infrastructure that could actually, lower our cost, lower our loading cost. We have to overcome a higher log cost to begin with, higher products cost, because we've got a reduced time frame to actually log in this neck of the woods. And so...
So even though we're as prolific as we are with standing timber,
mm-hmm.
our timber... loaded on the ship or our timber, waiting to be loaded on the ship is more costly than it is in other communities.
Yeah, our wood product cost on the stump is more costly. We have less time to actually go out there and harvest it because of the environmental restrictions.
So this is a California versus Oregon
that's
issue
Oregon,
also.
Washington, right,
okay.
Exactly. And then our loading costs at the dock are higher because of our infrastructure. Our docks basically have poor access. We have not enough longshoremen, so we have tremendous travel costs. And so in comparison to Northwest ports, we are expensive. So it's part of kind of the goal is to try to improve our facilities, try to get more longshoremen trained and lower our costs.
So an active port is less expensive because of the labor costs. You got people sitting around, standing around in the neighborhood, employed in that market, rather than these folks having to commute from somewhere else.
Yeah, San Francisco. So you can.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you can imagine just the travel cost alone. We have two gangs, and so we can support basically two cranes. Well, every one of these ships have four cranes. Where I came from in Astoria, there was four cranes actively working with 40 longshoremen. Here we have 20. So you have a doubling of the cost, just that one element alone.
Is part of that with the stevedore, with Westfall Stevedore going away, was that kind of like a canary in the mine shaft, that the business just wasn't here and it was just starting to implode?
Correct. It just was not here. So, I mean, we had some really great years in the early 90s where we kind of peaked out at 1.2, 1.3 million tons. But it steadily declined all the way down to a couple hundred thousand tons, and that's primarily our fuel. You know, thank heavens we have the fuel barge that comes in here, because that's where most of our tonnage comes from. And so, consistently we've been about a 500,000-ton port, and if we can get back up into 1 million tons, then I think that will enable us to compete.
It's 3:19.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. Mark the dates August 14th through the 25th for the 117th annual Humboldt County Fair in Ferndale. Beginning opening day, there'll be 8 days of fast horse racing. Competing beef and dairy cattle, goats, poultry, sheep, and swine will be on display and judged. The flower pavilion will be filled with beautiful plants grown by county gardeners. The art pavilion will have many delights for the eye. And enjoy the judged exhibits of locally made items, from baked goods to hand-spun yarn, with much in between, such as decorated potatoes, scarecrows, quilts, rugs, and home brews. There'll be plenty to eat and drink, so you can treat yourself to corn dogs and cotton candy. The commercial exhibits building will feature fascinating products. And of course, there's the Ferris wheel and other rides the kids will want to try. For hours and information, call 786-9511. That's 786-9511. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people, places, and things that makes us a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:23. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Jack Kreider. Jack, what is the condition of the docks on Humboldt Bay? Are there enough? Are they in the condition that are usable? There's some of the municipal ones, some of the municipal ones weren't replaced after they burned down. We've already mentioned, the marine dock that you guys have got. Rob Arkley's got his. Mm-hmm. Dave Schneider's got his.
Right.
Overall, how would you grade the bay's docks?
Well, I mean, generally, we've got Snyder's dock is a good dock. It's a 300-foot dock. It's got a single causeway in the center, which, you know, limits access again. Rob's got a 500-foot good concrete dock, excellent dock. It's got a single causeway to the south end. And so it's that access issue, and Rob's would be a great dock if we could add a second causeway to it. Be a lot more efficient. Right now,
it's the dock plus there are other amenities that have to be associated with it.
That's right. And the upland property is absolutely critical, and that's what we're trying to do with our berth too, is acquire upland property so we can support a dock operation. Without that, you just can't.
Likelihood of being able to acquire that property?
And it's been a year of negotiations, and we're getting very close.
Oh, so there's a willing seller.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Willing-ish seller.
Well, there's a lot of challenges to that property, and so we are now fully aware of what we would be purchasing, and so I think we're pretty close. So
that's one of the challenges, I would think, anywhere along the bay is the historical use and what is in there and what is permissible now versus what was acceptable 20, 50, 100 years ago.
That's right. I mean, we, both docks, our Redwood dock, berth 1, and then, of course, the freshwater facility, berth 2, that we acquired, we got for free, and we got money. So those two docks alone, we generated $1.5 million by taking the facility. And the good thing about berth 2, at least we had done some environmental work. We knew what we were getting involved in. Berth 1, we did not. And consequently, we have done phase 1 reports on that property, and it's definitely a challenged property, too.
So does that preclude being able to utilize it or make it more expensive? Or silly me, I think if there's something in the dirt, mm-hmm. you cap it with an asphalt layer, mm-hmm. and you're not going to be adding to it anymore.
Right,
so
right.
It may not get any better. But it's not going to be getting worse.
Right. It all depends what it is. Berth 1 is primarily petroleum products. Berth 2 is the pulp mill issue. And generally not bad, though. We've been doing the testing close to the bay. And that was the important part as we start development of the Taylor Seafood and their oyster operation. Wanted to make sure there was nothing coming off of the site, and everything's very low level, natural attenuation. And so we looks like it'll be a monitoring process for a long time, though.
Oh, that's better than having to go in there and rip everything out and
exactly
buy new cat litter.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Or whatever the equivalent is, huh?
Yeah.
So the infrastructure, the bones are okay.
The bones are good. They're fine. They're just not designed for efficiency.
Now, does that mean just bringing in new gear? Or does that mean redesigning from ground zero?
That's just adding causeways, adding access points. I mean, that's, a typical, the Fairhaven dock, about $1 million to add an additional causeway would make all the difference in the world.
Boy, does this one feel funny. $1 million isn't a lot of money in light of that. Why not float a bond, make it a high priority, make it happen? Because if that's a major blockage for being able to use that access point or mm-hmm. to use that facility, and all of a sudden then you're tripping over business,
right.
I would think that that would be something that people would be pushing you to do.
I would hope that when we get to the end of the tenant's lease, that's something we could probably talk about
this century.
Oh yeah very soon.
Okay,
very soon. Yeah.
Yeah, some of those leases go on and on.
This one's actually a pretty good one. So
everybody will win on that one?
I think so. I think, that there's resources, matching resources there to try to come up with a solution.
When you talk about solutions with the docks, is there enough business to go around for everybody?
Oh, the resource here is huge. I mean, yes, there is. And that's been my frustration, is that the wood basket is so huge here, and the resources are even the lumber mills are a resource. And just trying to have a decent facility where we can actually have reasonable cost of loading, reasonable cost of operation. We'll get there, but it just takes time. You know, the permitting process in California, it's been a real eye opener for me, and it takes time, we have to get through the permits, and that's one of the things that we're actually working on, is some designs and figuring out exactly what the permits are going to cost. And you know, very similar to some of the other projects, the oyster pre-permitting that we're working on, and you know, that's usually the biggest nut to crack, is to get the permit.
Is it the cost of the permits, the cost of the reports, or is it the time that it takes to get through the Corps of Engineers and the Coastal Commission and all the various entities?
Yeah, it's all of the above. It's time and money and everything, and we can't really compete without, you know, the permits for shovel-ready projects.
It's 3:30.
You want hot buys on furniture and appliances? You've got them during Burns Furniture's July Hot Buy Savings Event. Choose your new 7-piece living room group starting at just $899.95. In Burns Sleep Center, the new Serta Eye Comfort mattresses are the latest innovation. Or select your Englander mattress set in twin to king sizes. All with free local delivery and easy financing options. Hot buys on furniture and appliances during July at Burns Furniture, 5th and G Streets in downtown Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time, 3:36. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Jack Kreider, the CEO of the Humboldt Bay Harbor Recreation and Conservation District.
Perfect.
Jack, when you see the future of Humboldt Bay, what do you see? Go out 30 years. Is it what we see? Is it similar? Is it something called a thriving, prosperous port that we don't have any idea about unless we look in the history books? What does it look like?
I think the oyster industry is really impressive around here, and the resource that we have are pretty phenomenal. And so I see continued expansion of the oyster industry. This bay is the only disease certified bay, so you know, oyster seed production can be shipped anywhere. I see expansion, you know, multiple docks with multiple rafts. I see a good maybe two or three between public and private cargo docks. Not real large, but at least adequate to basically handle the wood chip industry and the export log industry. I'm truly impressed with the aquaculture potential of this bay, and I see more and more of that type of activity. Obviously, the recreational side is going to continue. The commercial industry is pretty healthy here, as far as the Harbor District, we'll continue to support that industry with resources. Love to see a truly working cruise ship dock, especially on the Eureka side. There's one heck of a market here for the cruise ship industry. But again,
it's there. You think
it's there? But we don't have the facility. And that's the critical component, learning what I learned in Astoria, how to attract the tenants, the cruise ship tenants, how to attract those vessels in here, what you need to provide for the guests that come here. And, we have all those components. We just don't have a good facility for the vessels to dock to. And the first thing is you make the captain happy. Captain of those cruise ships got to be happy when he comes in. Secondly, you make the passengers happy. And thirdly, you make money for the industry. So you actually protect the interests of the cruise ship to make sure that they make money. And those models are tremendously successful. And Astoria is a classic example of that.
Are they affordable in California?
Affordable, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So how much infrastructure cost would it take to get to the spot that you were alluding to? Is that 10 million? 100 million?
No, about 30 million. So it's not a small investment, but about $30 million would probably, you know, at least give us some decent facilities to actually build some business around here.
What would be the payback on that $30
million? What would be the return?
Yeah, how long would it take before it was turning a profit rather than retiring
debt? Well, that's what we were talking about, that 30 years, right? I think it would happen pretty quickly. I think that, you know, and this is one of the comments that I've made to some of the private dock owners is that, you know, a small ground lease versus $100,000 per ship in just docking fees. So the more ships you do, obviously you're going to get a faster return and you'll actually be able to invest money back into that dock. Right now, the way that the private dock owners, they have huge discounts on their docks. To compensate for the higher costs, they lower their dock costs. And so, consequently, they don't make enough money to reinvest back into their docks. And so, I think you get a pretty quick return off of that.
So what are the signs that you're seeing of this pent-up demand, this potential? I mean, what I sensed from what you were discussing in indicating boom might not be too strong a word to use. So what are you seeing out there that says we got to do it and we need to do it quickly?
I had customers, I had contacts that I brought from the Northwest. And when I came down here, they were all very interested in this area to see what we have. And when they came down and looked at the facilities, they understood the challenges. And so, you know, I've had multiple opportunities to actually do a couple ships per month. That's a huge volume. That's 1.2 million, you know, tons just right there, two ships per month. But I couldn't get them to come to the facility because the costs were too high. And the volumes weren't there. One of the problems we've got going on with the timber market, the lumber market being down, we're not producing enough wood chips. We're not harvesting enough logs. We're only harvesting enough to supply the current markets that our mills have. And so not only my customers didn't like the facilities that they saw and envisioned the high loading cost, but the suppliers could not produce the volume. And so that was frustrating. So the interest is there. They do the Google Earth. They look at the trees. They see the ownership, who owns the wood. And they certainly understand it is there. It's just we've got to put in some facilities so that we can efficiently load these products and produce enough volume. And
you mentioned the chips. Now, I know it's more of a land-based issue than it is a water-based one, but can we get access to the trees to do the chipping with the proper permits and the time cycles and all that kind mm-hmm. of stuff to satisfy the demand that you were alluding to mm-hmm. with these 12 or 24 ships a year?
You know, the California Redwood just invested a bunch of money in a new chip loading facility. They're just about ready to start, and their goal, of course, is to be able to harvest the tan oak to get rid of the tan oak so they can reforest. And so they put a lot of effort, a lot of investment in this, and they believe there is enough volume out there to support this chip operation. So that's what we need. We need somebody like California Redwood to start this process and actually start exporting chips, and I think it'll take off from there.
Didn't want to say snowball, did you?
No. Just take off. Somebody has to start.
Just a quick little drop.
Yeah.
In the bucket. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:43. We'll be back with more from Jack Kreider.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m., Confessions. 5 p.m., Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass, and on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass, and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:47. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Jack Kreider. So, Jack, the fireboat got another opportunity to go out and play, huh?
Yeah, it did. We had a fire first thing this morning, a homeless camp, and the fire department couldn't get to it with their trucks. And so they asked for the port to respond with a fireboat, and we did. And, you know, 2,000 gallons a minute, we got her put out in about 10 minutes.
Does it take a while for the boat to get there? I know Ken has talked about the speed of it.
Oh, it's fast. It's extremely fast. It's a, you know, 40-mile-an-hour boat. So
you were towing a skier behind you as you were responding to the scene.
Six of them, actually. It's got plenty of power. So, no, it's just it's such a nice asset for the community to have, and been around enough waterfronts over the years that you don't see this too often and be able to respond that quickly. So it's certainly, you know, the recent example up, you know, up in Warrenton where Pacific Seafood's 200 employees, you know, lost their building due to a fire. If our fireboat would have meant there, I bet it would have, you know, saved the day. Just a little run, though.
So the boat goes out this morning, does its magic, comes back.
Yeah.
Do you know, when a fire truck goes out, everything has to be put back the way that it was. Does the fireboat go through that same process as well?
No, not really. I mean, it's not like we have hoses or anything like that. So it worked well. You know, perfect example where, you know, a difficult location for the fire trucks to get out. Plus, it was dangerous too. I guess when they arrived on the scene, there was propane tanks that was in the fire itself, and they didn't want to get close to those, so we could actually attack it from a safe location. So
a win-win.
Yeah, it was great. It was perfect. Yeah. Pretty proud of the guys in the boat. So
then, did you go out in the boat?
Well, they let me go out once in a while.
Oh, but not this morning.
No.
That would be kind of fun, just to kind of go along for the ride.
Yeah.
Of course, you don't know how long they're going to be out there.
Yeah, that's true.
You show up, it could be a 24-hour job.
Well, I let them do their job. So, you know, I only go for the boat rides. You know?
Oh, I see. Yeah. the self-guided tour.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, yeah, folks want to. Is there an opportunity to donate for the fireboat? Do you have anything like that, or is this thing pretty much all squared up and you'd rather have those dollars donated to the fire department?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we just have an agreement to share in some of the annual maintenance costs for the fire department. So it's pretty simple, and so far, I mean, you know, it's a brand new boat, so the costs now to maintain it are going to be the smallest. So 10 years from now, yeah, we probably will set up a fund.
Yeah, have a little fundraiser. Yeah, exactly. A little barbecue on the fireboat.
That's right.
What? Thanks for coming by, Jack.
You're welcome. Anytime.
We've been Talking Shop this afternoon with Jack Kreider. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.